Shut up!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No one!
Well, here we go. Another Brock and Salk.
I found him giggling somewhere after too much laughing gas.
Laughing?
Sure. Like at the dentist? Right. They still give people laughing gas?
That was us on the course last Tuesday. Laughing, watching Howdy. We kind of laughed at first, and then by about hole 15, no more laughing.
I got to say,
spanking the golf ball like Bryson DeChambeau.
The four of us all went golfing on last week after the show. That's about as hard as I've laughed in months. I felt like I was laughing for 4 hours. Like, it was my mouth and sort of cheeks hurt afterwards, mostly from laughing at Howdy.
Was your core sore the following day?
Yeah, that too. I had a lot of strokes, so that was probably a part
of it.
No,
from the laughing and the giggling.
Oh, well, no. Jeez.
No, and also all the strokes that you had to take.
Yeah,
right?
My back was a little sore just from carrying you guys all the way down the course.
Wow.
Trying to drag you up to my ball.
The highlight of the night, of course, comes at the end
of course.
We go to grab dinner. And the four of us sit down together to eat dinner, socially distanced, all off in our own little table by ourselves, which was nice. And Kyle, unfortunately, had to leave early and took a while, but you know that's sort of how it goes. We knew he wasn't going to eat what he got.
It's time to go to Clee Ellum. Things take a little longer.
So Howdy gets a flatbread pizza, which, if I remember it correctly, was supposed to be an apple and bacon?
Yeah, apple bacon.
Apple and bacon flatbread pizza. And he orders it in good faith. And the woman says, "I'm sorry, we're out of apples," which in Washington to me is hard to fathom.
And how do you ask an appropriate clarifying?
In central Washington, no less.
Just the apples? Just the apples?
Right. We're not out of the pizza. We're just out of the apples that go on them.
Right.
And so he says, "Okay, well, all right. Could you substitute in pepperoni?" Not for the bacon, mind you. But for the apples.
Right. I'm not going to put pears on there.
Right. God, no. And she says, "Sure. Would you like the regular pepperoni or the fried? Yeah, no, I'll take the fried." She didn't even get the word out of her mouth. The fried.
Yeah.
So he takes his apple and bacon flatbread and turned it into a bacon and fried pepperoni flatbread.
Brilliant.
That, if I'm not mistaken, also had pancetta on it.
It was great. Oh, yeah. It absolutely did.
He played them so hard.
He
got them to replace like 5 cents worth of apple for like $2 worth of fried pepperoni.
That's right. I brought the value of that meal so far up.
He didn't pay for any of it, obviously. But still, it was nice of him to do that for me and Brock when we ended up paying for the meal at the end of all of that. So
Howdy is three
things.
Thank you. Howdy is clearly three things. I've learned this in our decade together. He's number one, and we can all agree with this. He is a tremendous gift receiver.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just, you can give gifts to all sorts of people in your life, and there's some that are terrible gift receivers. There are others that are on the other end of the spectrum. There's nobody further on that spectrum.
He's like those kids where they like prank him and they give him a banana for Christmas. A 2-year-old's like, "Oh, this is amazing."
Yes.
Howdy still is, you could prank him like, "It's a Starbucks lid." He would be like, "Oh my word.
That is so
That's
nice
so
of
thoughtful.
You. Thank you."
There is
Wassel is the only one who comes close to him.
Yeah, he's a good gift receiver.
Very good gift receiver.
Number two with Howdy. Number two. On the golf course, you'll never find a more gifted encourager.
It's true. You got this.
Brock and I were breaking it down from our car. The combination of Howdy's relentless encouragement and Salk wanting no part of it, particularly when he's just like topped a ball, duffed one, and Howdy's like, "Oh, great job, Mike. You almost had that one."
It's like having
Will you stop?
It's like golfing with my mom. Like,
yeah. He's got this optimism that tends to drive me nuts. Yeah. All right. Good effort, Mike. Good
and
job,
somehow,
Mike.
Howdy and I ended up in the cart together for all 18.
Oh, so
I got the relentless, annoying optimism.
Your life.
The only thing.
She has this optimism thing that tends to drive me nuts.
Right. The one thing I did get right, though, in our cart was as soon as Howdy brought out his 5-wood, I turned to him and said, "Hey, as soon as we get up there, Brock's going to make reference to your Nancy Lopez 7-wood. How long did it take after that?
Not 7 seconds. I approached the tee box.
Brock, oh, you got the old Nancy Lopez 7-wood I see out there. It's like, oh, yeah. Yep. Never heard that one, Brock.
Brock does it like always like he's like Frank Nobolo or something. He's always like, and here comes Osborne with the Nancy Lopez 7-wood.
And lastly, as you referenced,
yes.
The man loves good food.
He sure does.
There's just no debate. Like, he cherishes every bite of that fried pepperoni.
Yes.
Oh, it was... It capped off an incredible day.
I thought maybe,
I couldn't imagine a better way.
I thought maybe I could get a bite of the fried pepperoni to see if it tasted good with the chopped salad that I had ordered. And at some point, I was like, hey, can I, like, and I started to, like, maybe move my, and I got a smack with a fork, like, right in my hand. Like, oh, my God. Like, I'm sorry. I won't come near the fried.
Mike, it's COVID-19, all right? I can't be risking this.
Right. No, that was it.
It was COVID-19.
Right. No, that's, I know. I could tell. That's
the virus.
It was. Yeah, it was a virus thing. It definitely wasn't you defending your food like a wolf. Like, no, nothing like that at all. All right. Sorry for the diversion. We did have a good time last week. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoy when the four of us get together. Brock, I received all of two people, by the way, who tweeted in to say that they got to the end of last week's podcast and heard me say something nice about you. So, all right. Now we know.
So thank you, Luke Arkins out there. We appreciate you. You've been a diehard for
Luke.
A long time. Yes.
Luke's been loyal for years.
Now we know how many people get to the end of this sucker. So we'll put our best content forward. That's why we've been talking about Howdy for the last five
minutes. Amen.
All right. Baseball's back this week, man. Anybody excited?
Yes.
I am really, like, more excited than I thought I would be. I am really, really excited.
Have you been so excited that you've gotten on the stream and started watching their in-game practice games?
Did I Chromecast that to my TV so I could feel like I was watching real baseball? I was like, yes, here comes Donnie Walton. This is thrilling. Let's go. And what happened next? And came Jack Mossman, your friend and ours, the traveling secretary, starting in left field.
He had a decent at bat.
Oh, it was fantastic.
I mean, he struck out, but did you see his at bat?
No.
He was running 94 on his hands at him, giving him no breaks.
No.
Yeah, it was amazing.
They're gunning the ball, and he handled it. I mean, he didn't get a hit or anything.
Yeah, he's their traveling secretary. We deal with him when we go down to Peoria. He'll help us with tickets. He helps coordinate all their travel and flights, buses, hotels, etc.
And if I remember right, his first year was the trip to Japan.
Yes.
He he'd had the job for like 10 minutes, and they were like, oh, by the way, plan a trip to Japan. He's like, okay. Poor Jack, but he's a good dude. And he acquitted himself very well, I thought. He had good, solid swings, didn't make contact necessarily, but he was right on it.
I was desperate enough to be drinking all of that in. So, yes, I'm ready.
There are so many things I've just missed about baseball. And as the weather finally turned this past week here and we actually got summer, it sunk in even more of just like, man, all the things that baseball accompanies. And I think that's what it always is for me, is the way baseball accompanies everything. I'm cooking dinner at night or grilling or whatever. The game's on. Mm. Right. It's just it's there with you. You jump in the car to go somewhere, you throw the game on, you continue from where you were just watching, right? You get there, maybe you're on your phone and following to see what's happening. I mean, baseball just, it comes with you. It's not an event. It's not like football. You don't make your plans around the fact that Sunday at 1 o'clock you're going to be watching the game. It's just assumed. It's just on. And you're just, it follows you throughout the summer wherever you go.
Yeah. And I thought about this before until you referenced that. It is the pastime for a reason. It passes time. And there are pastimes of your life that you look at it and you view it differently. When you were a passionate teenager or in college watching the Mariners with great emotion and just passion, and I got to see this and take it in, or maybe you do so at the sports bar, right? And you're hanging out with your college buddies, and then all of a sudden you get to our phase of life, Salk, with kids, and it's in the background while you're grilling, or it's just on, or, you know, you put the kids to bed and you're sitting there, you know, 9 o'clock at night here in the Northwest as the sun is setting, and you're sitting on the couch and you're watching it with your wife or your friends, or, you know, and then maybe some other friends come over. And as you get older, you see a lot of older Mariner fans where it's their social equity. They like to go to the stadium, right, with others of their age and sit there and bring out their scorebook and relive their memories through. So it kind of takes you through all phases of life much more easily than just the emotional drain that is Sunday.
It's true. It really is different. Yes. God, you talking about that passion in college, it just was reminding me of a moment. Maybe I've told the story before, I don't know, but it was the 1999 ALDS Game 5. You may know that game as the game Pedro Martinez came in against the Indians and just shut them down over five or so innings. He was hurt, and he didn't start game five, which was the deciding game, and he came in out of the bullpen, and like as soon as he came, he was like, oh, this thing's over. And I think he didn't allow a hit, if I'm not mistaken. Wow. Pedro was – it was him at his absolute very best. And the Red Sox came back from two games down. They were down 0-2 and ended up winning that series 3-2. Troy O'Leary hit a couple of home runs. Nomar was great. It was a great, great series. And I'm watching in my dorm room. I was a senior in college. And in the last inning, like they're up a few or whatever. And anybody who knows Red Sox history prior to 2004 knows that nothing's safe. Like, no matter what it is, there's a decent chance they're going to blow it. 1986 like didn't feel like that long ago in 1999. And my girlfriend at the time, who was a huge, huge baseball fan, that spring, she didn't come with me and a bunch of people, including Heather, by the way, to Hawaii because she wanted to go to A's spring training. Like, she was a huge, right?
That's really too bad.
I hung out with Heather that entire trip. Weird story. It was like 3 years before we started dating. But so she... she calls me on my dorm phone right at the end of the game. It's like a couple outs left. And she's like, hey. I'm like, hey. She's like, congratulations. I'm like, what? And I hung up the phone on her. I was like, never say that. And I like hung up the phone on her and went back to watching the game. And my buddy Dave's like, who is that? I was like, it's Andy. Like, I don't know what the heck she's congratulated me for. This thing's not over. I was furious at
her. Break up with her?
No. Well, eventually, yeah. I mean, we're not together anymore.
That was the first draw. And, you know, right. For that.
That was the beginning
of the
end.
You can't stand when the foundation has something pulled right out of it.
That's right.
But the passion was real, man. I mean, I was legitimately furious that somebody would say something like that. I'm not sure that would.
So passion meter right now is the game's.
Well,
been
it's not quite there.
Is the game
not there anymore?
Like, I'm not ready to end a relationship because the Mariners are about to start a 60-game season.
Right. Yeah, it's not there. I'm willing to make compromises in my life these days that I wasn't necessarily when I was 21.
Good for you, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, Kyle. I've grown.
This is great.
I've really grown in the next half of my life. That was half my life ago, right? We're getting old. Speaking of kids that age, there are some kids on the Mariners, right? And Kyle, if you're throwing the Chromecast on, what are you doing? You're watching the kids. You're not tuning in to see Kyle Seager.
Well, you are for Donnie Walton, but yeah, not Kyle Seager.
You're not. You're
an, who's I mean, Donovan Walton this right. year, by the way. But no, you're watching Lewis and
you want to see the kids, man. Gilbert. You want to see what Logan Gilbert does.
Evan White.
All right. So I thought I would run through a bunch of the younger players on the team, and maybe we just say, what do you need to see from them this year? What are you hoping to see from them this year that gives you, you know, confidence in what's going on with the Mariners or what with that player? And you're not going to get it from every one of them, right? I mean, we all know you can if you have a hit rate of what? What are you hoping for as a hit rate on these guys? 40%?
Cool. I was going to say,
I mean, that'd be incredible, right? Yeah. 25% of like real hit rate would be amazing. So you're not going to get it from all of these guys, but if you can get it from a few and hopefully then get it from Kelnick and then kind of the next generation up, you really have something. So we'll start with Kyle Lewis just because he hit all the home runs last year. We talked about him last week. What do you need to see from Kyle Lewis this year?
Ooh, just evened out, just some level of consistency. Came out on fire, right? And then the whole, can you make adjustments? And you saw the pitchers obviously make adjustments because the guy can damage a fastball. So is there a level of just consistency? And it's going to be very difficult in the 60-game season, right? This is going to be a sprint. So if you go through a week or two in a normal 162-game season, as every player, even the elite guys do, where there's, you know, a slump or a bump in the road, it's going to be exaggerated over the course of 60 games. So hopefully it's not a week or two or 3 weeks. It's a series or two series, and you flush it and you get back on that consistency train. So can he hit north of 250? Right? Can he have an on-base north of 330? I'm not asking for, you know, a 300 hitter and 360 on base, but can he just one out of four times? Can you find yourself on base? Because you know the double and the triple and the home run and just that Oppo Taco power is there. So he hits 250 for me over the course of 60 games.
That'll
that would be a big
you.
Step.
Which is funny because I know you're not like a simple batting average guy, but in this case, it would show you something about Kyle Lewis.
If he hit 240.
Yeah, I mean, I'll throw how about passable defense? And I know Scott said his defense has looked better and that he's going to play a little bit of center field. What I saw in his brief stint in the majors last year was not major league quality defense. He got turned around pretty bad on a couple of fly balls. I mean, he did not look like
he played more last year, right?
Right.
Field?
They threw him in right a bunch
he's
of times.
He's a career center fielder until he had a couple of knee injuries and then moved to corner. Like, I think the first time his life he's played.
But that's probably going to have to happen. Right. Like, I mean, I don't think his speed at this stage after the knee injuries is going to allow him to long term be their center fielder, especially in this park. So, you know, he's going to have to figure that out. Can you play right or left field capably and not get yourself turned around, be at the very least not a liability out there? You don't have to be a gold glover, but you got to not be a liability. And I think what we saw last year was that.
You think you give him a chance to play center? Something he has done?
Well, Scott
something
said
he's
he
more
will.
Comfortable. Something, as Scott said, it's easier to get a jump on the ball because it's right at you a little bit more than those corner spots.
I think that they'll have an opening in center field sooner rather than later. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
I have exactly zero confidence in Malik Smith.
Are we going to play that sound now or later? When do you want to play that
well,
sound?
That's not why. It has nothing to do with that. I just haven't had Howdy, confidence
like
in Malik Smith ever.
I'd like to play it now.
No, we're getting to that. Okay. We'll get to that sound, I promise. How about Evan White?
It's weird that I would use this word because it's probably, again, totally unfair for someone that's never had a major league at bat. But a little bit to what we were talking about earlier with Jack, the traveling secretary, Mossman, is just comfort. How comfortable does he look in the box? Right? How comfortable signing a long-term extension?
Hopefully more comfortable than Jack Mossman.
Hopefully a little bit more. And he gets paid to be more comfortable. And he's gotten paid to be some of their future. Right? They believed in him before he played a major league game or had a major league at bat. So just a comfort level. Does he look and feel? And I know that is just very ambiguous and kind of weak sauce. But to me, with him, because he'll do it in the field, I think he's uber.
You're following on Twitter. He is just flashing leather left and right.
Dude's got some, he can pick it.
So does he just look comfortable up there? Or is it just overwhelmed? And you're like, oh man, just not ready for this stuff at this level yet. Because we've seen those guys come up and you're like, ooh, you look just overwhelmed in every way. And I hope it's not that way for him because he's going to get an opportunity to run with it.
Yeah, I would say for me, it's more about his pop. Like, does he show some of the pop that seemed to just show up for him last year? I mean, you kind of go through him in the minors. He's always had a pretty good on-base percentage. He finds ways to get on base. We know he can pick it defensively. That's kind of who he is. But if you're going to play first base in the major leagues, you're going to have to do a little bit more than get on base and play good defense.
Yes.
I mean,
that's Austin Nola. Is it Austin Nola? One of the Nola brothers.
Yeah, or quite frankly, like, take a shortstop and throw him at first base. I mean, like, if all you need is good defense and get on base a little bit, that's out there. Last year, he hit 18 home runs, and that was that kind of wakes you up a little bit. Like, oh, okay, well, maybe this is something he can do, is hit for some power.
Mike, you grow
he did
into,
in Arkansas.
Mike, you grow into power.
You learn power is
like
what
how
you
many
do.
Times
Brock,
you
have learn
you told
power.
Me you learn
you power. Learn power. Right. You just learn it. You turn 23, seriously. 24, you get hooked up with Mike Trout's guys, and the next thing you know, you learn power.
Did you see Howdy
just like
on
Tiger
hole 17 versus hole 1? He learned power.
He learned power. Learn it.
Over the course of the round, he's like, I'm going to let it go.
Well, I'll be looking for Evan White to learn a little power here entering, you know, age 24 season, first in the big leagues. You know, it does that start to
it's
show
It's funny
up
you say that, and I know we got a lot to get through here, but you know what just reverberates in my head as you say that? And it's totally unfair, but it just does. The fact that Dustin Ackley, after he got drafted in his first batting practice in Safeco Field.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, couldn't hit a home run.
No.
Right.
Please hit one
out. You know, that was before they moved the fences in.
He had he hit some home runs once he got here, by the way. Like, he did learn a little bit of power.
That's because he changed
his
swing and decided, like, I don't really care about hitting the ball in the field of play. Right. I'm just going to try and hit it far.
And that didn't work for him.
Kyle Seager does it. I'm going to do it, too.
That's a whole different kind of mess. But Evan White, like, he hit 18 home runs last year in Double A. I'd like to see some of that start to continue. How about Justice Sheffield, who we did get a pretty good look at last year? You know, you mentioned comfort for Evan White. I'll say poise and maturity for Justice Sheffield. I know he's got good stuff. I don't think that's really, you know, a debate. It's not elite, unbelievable stuff, but he's got major league quality stuff. Can he harness it? Can he be consistent with it? Can he get guys out enough to go deeper into games?
So what do you do if you're Justice Sheffield? You're his sibling, you're his agent, you're his marketing manager, and it's a 60-game sprint, right? So conceivably, how many starts is he going to have? 15, 12 starts? Do you ask him to just lean into his fastball and his slider, or do you say, no, man, this is a 60-game season where you have got to develop that third pitch? that changeup that, you know, is starting to be talked about and that Scott was talking about in the spring and even has talked about over the course of the last few months. Is this one is a young player? I find it kind of fascinating for...
And he is a young player, by the way. Just to remind everyone, because now we've seen Justice Sheffield in the league the last couple of years, he and Evan White are the same age. They're both entering their age 24 season.
Yep.
So Evan White never had a big league at bat, a lot of promise. Justice Sheffield has pitched a couple of seasons now up and down in the big leagues, and everyone's down on him because he hasn't succeeded yet. But he and Evan White are the same age.
So how do you approach it? Like, if you're advising him, how do you approach this season? Do you say, Justice, I know there's going to be some bumps in the road with this changeup, but over the long term, if you get that third pitch, you go from being a middle-of-the-rotation guy to maybe being a number two, right? Or if you're just going to be a two-pitch guy, you know, and that third pitch you're just never really comfortable with, you're probably a bottom-of-the-rotation guy in this league. So do you go for it over the 60-game stretch? Do you encourage him to take some of that risk? Like Jim Zorn and Mike Holmgren said to me in a mini camp practice, like, hey, this is mini camp, dude. Stop thinking, you blacksmith. Just relax. Let it go. You throw picks, I don't care. But I want to just see you cut it loose. And then first time I threw that pick, and it was like, what are you doing? Well, you told me to cut it loose. Like, right? So if you're...
Poor Brock.
So if you're...
Hey, Mike Brock! Faster!
Brock.
Faster!
Mike Holmgren was just so wrong for
no,
you.
No, he was not.
Yeah,
he was not.
You just explained why he was.
Well, that was just one circumstance.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That was just one moment in
that
time.
That you remember 20-something years later, like it was yesterday.
But I'm kind of curious to see for Justice and for some of these other young guys, can you... Like in this season that is so awkward, that is so strange, it's 60 games, but yet you've got a massive opportunity. Can you develop that third pitch over the course of this season? Because that would portend to pretty good things down the road.
Look, again, the record doesn't matter. Like you've got to show you belong over time and that you're going for. You see their new commercials, the tear it down to, what is it, tear it down to tear it up? I like them. You see Taiwan Walker was retweeting it. He's like, man, this is fun. These kids are good. Mm-hmm. He was a little mad that they spelled his name wrong, I think,
That's not good.
That's not what you're looking for.
That's not
Taiwan
good.
Spelled wrong. He wasn't wild about that.
Like I've been here twice
now. No, it was just A-U-N instead of U-N.
I was the guy that you were pointing to. You should know me by
it was
then.
Clearly a just a typo. But anyway.
Dude, Justice Sheffield, though, I mean, seriously, there is no single Mariner prospect that can change the course and direction of where they're heading like Justice Sheffield. They have nobody who's, like, really ready on the cusp of, like, this guy could be an ace as soon as now. Like, maybe if Yusei figures it out. But Justice Sheffield was supposed to be the linchpin turning element of this whole thing when they acquired him, a potential top-of-the-rotation arm. Nobody talks about him anymore, but if he does that, it changes everything.
I would agree. He's your big return for James Paxton. And in order for that deal to make sense and work out, he's got to make sense and work out. And you'd sure like him to eventually at least achieve what Paxton achieved. Right? I mean, young lefty for younger lefty. And the goal is for him to achieve exactly
well, and like Randy
close
and
to what Paxton did.
And Paxton, you know, lefties can learn command, Mike. You can learn power, you can learn a little command.
Well, let's stay with the lefties then. And Howdy just mentioned his name, Yusei Kikuchi. And I'll admit, I'm much higher on guys like Sheffield and everyone else we've mentioned than I am on Kikuchi. I'm nervous about Kikuchi. I feel good about Sheffield and some of these other guys. And, of course, he'll probably go have a Cy Young season now over the course of 60 games. But last year was underwhelming. He wasn't bad, but last year was underwhelming. It certainly wasn't.
He was pretty bad last year.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Struggled.
It wasn't great.
A lot.
Too many home runs.
He was pretty bad last
walks.
Year.
A lot
couldn't
of walks.
Get out of the fourth inning.
There were a lot of issues.
He had a lot going on. He moved over here. He lost his father. He had the birth of a child he'd missed, I think.
He was certainly underwhelming last year. 6-11, he went with an ERA almost 5.5. It was not a great year. A whip of 1.5. Again, we used to kind of talk through some of those numbers. Almost 2.8 walks per 9 innings.
How many home runs per 9 innings?
Two per 9. Yeah. That was near the top on the team. I mean, there were some issues. Yeah. And the problem I have, and you're right, there were some things that kind of, you know, going on in his personal life. But I can't name, and we said this last year, I can't name a Japanese pitcher, someone who's come over from Japan, who's gotten better after the beginning. Generally, what we've seen is that those guys come in and their best seasons are at the very beginning of their career, and then over time they've tailed off, right? Think of Yu Darvish. Think of Daisuke Matsuzaka. I mean, like
Hideki Nomo.
Yeah, I mean, like there are a bunch of those guys. And Nomo, by the way, at least kind of had a rebirth to it because that forkball was just so ridiculous that he was able to keep harnessing it. He's probably, I don't know. I love Hideo Nomo, man. Mm-hmm. I think he's a really good pitcher. And I don't know if the numbers would say he's the best who's come over from Japan, but I'd take him over just about anybody.
Can you envision Kikuchi after last year and what you just said as being a top end of the rotation guy?
It's hard.
He's got to get back to 95, 96.
Yep.
If he's throwing 91 all the time with inconsistent control over all of his stuff, it's just not going to play.
Top of the rotation, Brock. I think he's got to prove he's an actual major league starter.
Hold on, Kyle.
Not top of the rotation.
You watched him on the Chromecast on Monday night. How was he?
Yeah, it looks like he's maybe a little tight in the back. That rotation to the back of the rotation. Yes, he's trying to hit the back of the windup. The rotation's right. A little stiff. He needs Howdy. Howdy's shoulder rotation out at the course last week. He could learn a thing or two.
How about J.P. Crawford? Another guy they got as they were selling off pieces. You get J.P. Crawford back. And
just hit. Just hit. Can you just hit the ball? As Salk screamed through the microphone when I was sitting in Bristol, Connecticut, and I'll never forget that. Can these guys just hit?
I feel like that was a very fair rant that day based on what we were seeing. They couldn't hit.
No. There was a lot of goose eggs for most of the innings that year for the Mariners offense. So because the speed
is
there.
Is that the 2010 team?
That's right.
What the heck?
That was when Jack Cerenza convinced us all that playing good defense mattered because, as he said, a run saved is just as good as a run scored. But that wasn't really the case.
But it's not really.
No, that was not actually true.
It's almost as good, but it's not as good.
No, because you need to score runs to win.
Yeah, just ask Cliff Lee. Right.
What the heck?
That rant was long, too. It was like 10 minutes.
It was like three times because we went back to it every hour.
By the end, I could barely talk. My voice is all scratchy.
And I know it's different for a shortstop than it is a first baseman. To your point about Evan White, where you'd like to see a little bit of pop. Right, you don't necessarily need that out of shortstop, especially not the ones with the range that he has. But you think of that position in the league right now, the guys that differentiate themselves, and even in your own division in the West, is those guys that do add a little pop. Can he add a little pop to his bat?
He did a little bit last year. I mean, to be fair, the guy hit 7 home runs in half a season. I mean, if he has that amount of pop. Whew. Next year, over a full season, let's say it was over 162. If he were to hit
15, 16 home runs,
yeah, I mean,
it's
gonna
be more than that. It's gonna be like 25 home runs.
Even if that guy hits 12, 13 home runs, yep. I feel like you're getting something. But he's got to bring all of the other things that he should bring to the table. You can't do that and hit 225 like you did a year ago.
Yeah,
like to me, the thing is just solid contact. Hit the ball harder. Doesn't necessarily need to go out of the yard.
Yes.
But what's I read? He had one of the lowest ball speed off the bat of anybody in the league last year. Mm. Like you've got to raise that. You've got to be hitting the ball in a
lower
commanding
than
way.
Ugh.
Maybe I'm reading that or remembering that wrong. I could have sworn that I saw
felt
that.
Like Malik.
Yeah, he might have made a lot of bad contact. He crushed balls. He just, may not have made consistent great contact.
Maybe that's what it is. Regardless, hit the ball hard and well and often, and don't hit 225. I mean, his OPS for the year was 684.
I think he's going to hit 225, though. That's going to be the deal for him.
Well, then you got to find a way on base, right? I mean, like, okay, if you're going to do that, get your on base up so high that you can start to handle it and play a little bit. I mean, like, I know it sounds like a little of everything with him, but in 90 games last year, he made 12 errors? Not terrible, and we saw at times. I mean, he's a gifted defensive player. He made the play, not just of the year, that's one of the best defensive plays I've ever seen in my life.
Somehow going fully backwards.
Never seen anything like it. He managed to do a crow hop without his feet touching the ground.
He defeated
ridiculous.
He defeated inertia.
He did.
You know how hard that is to do?
It's really amazing.
Newton's just sitting there pulling his hair out.
Oh! But a little more consistency, a little more consistent contact, and it sounds like his leadership has been there and that the dedication's there. He's a great kid. I love J.P. Crawford. Of all of the guys on this list, he's the one I'm rooting for the most. Like, I love him. Yeah, he does. I really like him. I hope he makes it. I guess I'd put Shed Long on that list, too, another kid who you can't help but like when you're around him. Mm-hmm. He's just a lovable, energetic. Did you see the picture he posted the other day?
This big picture at the field.
Yeah. And just like a lifetime dream. Like, cool, man.
Don't let him tell you what you can't be or something like that or what your dreams can
be. He's just a little guy who swings out of his heels. Like, I love it. But talk about the defense. Like, dude, you're going to bring the defense up to par.
Yeah.
Like, what we saw. Do you remember that game in Boston last year?
Yeah.
Where, like,
the pop-up?
That can't happen again. Like, that seemed fairly normal.
High school catcher. It's a transition. It's not easy.
It sure is.
Transition away from the catcher spot.
You got to either bring the defense up to where the bat is, or the bat better be so unbelievably good that we don't worry about the defense. And I think he's got a little way to get there. So, you know, there's just a short list of a few of the younger guys that you will get a chance to see all the time. You're not talking about Kelnick or something like that. Mm-hmm. These are guys who are going to be in there that
will
you're going to be
Logan
seeing.
Will we see Logan Gilbert?
Oh, yeah. I think so.
So probably not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you want to does raise a bigger question of, do you want to burn service time for people, whether it's Kelnick or Logan Gilbert or anybody else?
Not this year.
I'm finding it really hard to imagine burning a year of service time for anybody in a 60-game season for a team that is specifically rebuilding. And I know that you got to find ways to get their development and make sure. And that's why that taxi squad thing is so important, because they've got to be improving this year. But it's hard to imagine burning
but
a
you
year
know
when,
how
when,
goofy
when this doesn't
baseball
mean anything.
Is. Remember last year, even the wet blanket himself wrote about these Mariners when he was in Kansas City. Jeff Passan went and saw him, and they were what, like 14-3 or something ludicrous. I mean, just incredible start. And you say, wow, over the course of 162, that was obvious.
Yeah, that's going to even out over a course of 60.
You think over a course of 60?
Yeah. If last year's Mariners played 60 games, it did even out over the course of 60. I mean, you saw it.
Yes. But there can be a lot more fool's gold, and you have an expanded playoffs, and you just have an opportunity to taste some level of success that has been so hard to find here. And what if you're just at 500, right? What if you're, you know, 17-17 through the halfway mark, right? And Logan Gilbert's had a couple decent starts. I mean, you're going to continue to.
They did start off 13-3 last year. That was the start.
13-3.
What were they after 60 games?
Oh, I'm going to guess they were like 21 and.
They started off 13-3.
It felt like 13-47.
They started off at 13-3. What were they after 60 games? That was going into June 1st last year.
29-31.
I was going to say 32-28.
They were 25-35.
Woo! That came.
So I don't know, man. I understand that it's not 162. But after you know, they were 13-3, and then they were 25-35.
Fast,
it did
huh?
happen
did,
fast.
Did it feel that fast?
Yeah, yes, it yeah, did. It did.
I guess. It
yeah,
did.
I mean, they were 13-3, or they were 13-2. Excuse me, they were 13-2.
Thank you.
And then got swept in Houston and against Houston and Cleveland. Yeah. They went 0-6 at home.
Yeah.
Then they went on the road, by the way, and swept the Angels.
Yep.
And then lost 3 straight. And then it was over from there. There's a lot of 4-game, 3-game, 6-game, 3-game.
So they're 16-8, right? Oh, at the almost halfway mark here. If they're sitting there at 16-8.
They were 16-8 last year.
Sitting there at 16-8 at nearly the All-Star break.
But then they went 25-35 at the end of that, man. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
So you would not burn Logan Gilbert's service
time. No, or Kelnick. And now that changes if either of them are willing to sign some sort of a long-term Evan White-style deal. And that's what I've been hoping that Kelnick will do for a while now, because I think he's pretty ready to play in the bigs. I don't think that there's too much left for him in the minors. But you can't burn it unless he's willing to sign some kind of an Evan White deal. And to me, that should be what you're dangling in front of him. Hey, man, you want to play? You want to be a part of this? I see that you're hitting home runs off Taijuan Walker and talking smack about it afterwards. You want to do that? Sign a deal. Come play. And we don't have to play this ridiculous game with your service time. But otherwise, you're burning a year of a player that you're going to regret later when he's leaving a year earlier than you want him to.
Yeah.
Or you've got to re-sign him a year earlier than you want him to. So I think a smart decision is to keep those
guys down. I think I get
that
a little more with the position player than I do the volatility of a pitcher.
Yeah, there's something to that.
Especially a college pitcher, right? You drafted him out of college.
That's fair. It's a good point.
So if he's ready, I'd like to see that big hoss out there.
This is going to be fun. Friday, we finally get a chance to see some Mariner baseball. I'm going to bet, based on seeing some of the Phillies players yesterday, et cetera, I'm going to bet that there are going to be players kneeling for the national anthem. I mean, we should start kind of thinking and preparing for that now, that will in all likelihood happen. How are you going to react?
It'll be a little different, right? Especially for baseball. We've encountered this already through the NFL. Have we encountered this in baseball through the years?
No. No. No, we have not.
And it's, yeah, and it feels, yeah. And how is it going to be covered? I mean, football is such as we've talked about. It's a one
spectacle.
It's a spectacle. It's right. A Sunday afternoon. It's a Monday night. It's just a, is this going to be covered on an every night basis, right? Is this going to be a talking point every single night over the course of the season?
What I imagine is based on the way we generally see the sports covered, it'll be like, well, here they'll blame baseball for it rather than the players. Like, well, typical baseball can't get anything right. Yeah. They're supposed to be the American this, and here's what baseball. Like yeah. Somehow this will be Rob Manfred's fault. I will say it's going to happen. And I don't think it will receive nearly the same level of criticism that Colin Kaepernick got however many years ago. I don't think so at all. And I'm not saying it won't be a story. I think it will. I think you're going to see more of what we saw. Gabe Kapler and managers, et cetera, coming out and kneeling with their players. And I don't think it's just going to be African-American players who are out there. I think you're going to see a whole fabric, a community of players that are standing together. It doesn't mean that all 25 guys on a roster are going to do it, far from it. But I don't think it's just going to be black players. I think you're going to see white players. I think you're going to see managers, or at least a few, who go out there and stand or kneel shoulder to shoulder with their team.
Mm-hmm.
So I that's what I'm expecting, and I'm here for it. I'm curious to see what it looks like, and I'll support it. I think that yes, there is an element now where it's easier than it was when Kaepernick did it, but that doesn't take away from a strong statement being made.
And are they going to speak to it?
I don't know.
I mean, I think that's...
We've seen some players start
that's
to.
That's the element of it as well, is this just you for sure? Or do you believe... As we've talked about this with Doug Baldwin and the Seahawks and the players here.
Right, because we saw Jeremy Lane unable to speak to much of anything.
Yes.
Right.
And that makes it much more difficult.
But I don't think it's going to feel... I don't know that it'll be the same as that. Like, I don't know. I think that if I were a player and... Look, in baseball, you may get guys that barely speak English who are making the same stance. Do they have to speak to it in English? No. I think if I'm a player and I'm not the most verbose, right? And you want to ask me questions? Hey, I've made my statement. That's it. I'm making my statement by what I'm doing, with my action rather than with my words. That's not my strength. I'll leave it to the guys who are really good. Someone like D. Gordon, who I'm sure will be able to explain himself very well if he chooses to kneel. D's a really bright guy and well spoken, easy to understand. Absolutely. I'd leave that to D. Gordon or to anyone else.
You call that the Jeremy Lane. You say, my actions have spoken. Right. I will choose not to let my words reflect anything because it's just not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that, I think we're going to see it. You're right. Not every player who kneels is going to be able to fully explain why, but I'm okay with that. I don't know that they have to. And I, you know, if I were a reporter, first of all, there's barely going to be any reporters to ask them questions about it. They're going to have bigger fish to fry. But I don't know. I don't feel like that's something they would need to explain.
Sam and I were throwing a football the other day, and then we were walking away, and Damon's like, "This is weird. Like, you two are built exactly the same." Like, yes, lefty, super lean.
How hard is he throwing the ball?
Real hard. He almost broke my orbital bone in this virtual cam. Yeah, I don't know if you'll see the video. I for a second was a little scared. I have good hands because I've caught a gazillion passes, but he's hurting my hands. I'm like, oh, this sucks. This is what it was.
It's like playing catch with you. It's like, this isn't fun.
Yes. Back in the day.
Correct.
Oh, man, this is terrible.
And it was kind of rainy. It was the only Friday morning. It was the only little moisture we had. And the ball went through my hand and hit me right here.
Oh,
and it's still a little tender. And I was like, oh, and I totally played it off, like around, like eyes watering, like picked it up, threw it back to him. I'm like, did I just break my face? And am I going to have a black eye for the rest of the video? And by the way, wait till you watch some of this. Wyman was into it, as was Moyer. I mean, into it.
Can you give some of the camp details?
710sports.com/win.
Oh, it is.
Is where you can go to sign up.
Yeah. The camp was, I couldn't. You know, we just got done talking about baseball and how much we missed it. And when Paul Moyer comes over and he's doing backpedaling drills, I mean, absolutely into it. And while out of breath, still just you could just see his investment to like coach and teach. And I learned stuff. I've been around football for 40 years. I learned stuff. Dave Wyman comes over and he's striking the bag. He's like, no. And
you're going to hit it.
Yes. And he's coaching me like, This is how you roll your hips. This is how you didn't bump us. Takes a football and starts doing like drills with the football that I've never seen before, like his fingertips and his hands and his strength. And then little Sammy, my nephew, is just drilling me in the face. And I think for all of us,
little Sammy anymore.
It was just an outlet. It was pure joy and a pure outlet what we love to do.
No, and Don O'Neill though this year.
No, and yes, I was a clown, and you're gonna make fun of me when you
lose.
You
didn't lose your voice.
I didn't, but I certainly yelled a bunch of different times to bring the kids up. And hey, little Johnny, let's go. Bring it up! Don't be the last one walking.
You were making the fun of the kids.
Don't be last. Yes, and I was screaming in my
backyard. Encourage your teammates.
Yes. We can all be encouragers. Clap it down. Come on, clap it down.
He did 17 versions with different kids' names.
I wish I could have seen Dave Wyman's face as you were doing that.
Oh, you should have. Because I called him down. I said, Dave, come here. Here we go. Slow clap. And he's looking at me.
No.
And I'm like, here we go. Here
no,
we go.
Brock.
Here we go. Ready?
Well, plus.
And Wyman looks at me. I'm like, break, bro. Come on, let's do it again.
Wyman hates when you clap. You were clapping at Dory Monson's house one time. Wyman complained about that for a year. I was trying to watch the game, and Brock's just clapping.
Yes, very loud. But I had flashbacks to 10 years of doing it. I'm so glad that we committed to doing it. And when you do watch Bumpus and Sam and Dave and Paul, you just watch their energy for it and get into it. It was terrific.
Well, we've been talking, Brock. We've been talking about the weather. It feels like every week, but it's good now. Like I'm happy.
You're in a good place.
I am in a good place. We're out there barbecuing. We got
it's better for all of us.
It is. I'm doing.
You don't have to receive the texts.
I'm doing. Last Thursday was sort of
his
the last
weather
day
texts
for me.
Are like my Seahawk game day texts.
It's like. Pretty you know, it's the exact same. Brock, relax, in the fourth quarter, Humber. It's going to turn. It's like, Mike, come mid-July,
yeah,
you know it's going to be 80
No, that's not
degrees.
What you said. You said July 5th, and instead it was like July 18th.
15th,
yeah,
you know,
no,
give or
there
take.
Was like another 2 weeks
it's
in there,
art,
bro.
It's not a science. It's not exact.
Anyway, if you don't want to do the grilling, and I like doing the grilling, but sometimes, you know, you got a bigger group, or you got, you know, your whole family's coming in, or you just don't want to do it that day, let Famous Dave's do it for you. They got tons of options available online. For catering and to go, like Famous Feasts, Pitmaster favorite combos. You can even order meat by the pound, or in Howdy's case, what's bigger than the pound? The gross
kilo. Or the stone,
the tonnage.
Magnus for Magnus.
He orders meat by the tonnage. If you haven't been to Famous Dave's, you got to check it out. St. Louis style spare ribs. That's my jam right there. I love ribs. A whole country roasted chicken, maybe Texas beef brisket, Georgia chopped pork. Yeah, it's kind of the best of right there. They got burgers, wings, sandwiches, homestyle desserts. And hungry. It's too early when we tape this thing. I'm ready to go eat right now. Anyway, adult beverages also available to go. Perfect to pair with the barbecue. So go. Here's what you can do. Go to togo, T-O-G-O, .famousdaves.com. T-O-G-O, not T-O as an N-O, T-O-G-O. @famousdaves.com, and they are open 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Famous Dave's. All right, Brock, we're getting close now to training camp, finally, which is cool. And we'll sort of see what all happens with that and whether or not they're able to pull this off. And as much as we all hate preseason games, I don't know about no preseason games.
Watch your mouth.
I know, right. Now, as much as we all love watching Brock
Who
do preseason
the heck
games. All right.
Are you and what? Do you want to start this segment over, please, for crying out
And
loud?
As painful as it is to watch the Seahawks TV broadcast.
My radio co-host here.
You're right. Those almost 50 shares in our market. Yeah, people just hate the preseason games. Yeah, no, just the livelihood that it creates for my family. No, you're right. Who wants a preseason
Well, it is
going to
be.
Game?
I will feel bad for you this year. I'm sure the livelihood of your family is at stake
it
over
is.
The Seahawks yes. preseason.
Trying to put food on the table.
Right. Yes, I do feel bad. I hope you survive.
It's going to cost players on every team their jobs. There's going to be at least one or two. I saw Ross Tucker tweet that last night. Former lineman said, I would have never made it in the NFL. I'd have been cut my rookie year. There have not been preseason games where I can go out there and show you when the lights come on and you've got to leverage in this league and play with pad level and you've got to understand how to play with pad level and you don't have any chance to do it as a young undrafted player.
Yeah.
No preseason. I mean, Matt Flynn's your starter, not Russell Wilson.
You get no at-bats. You get batting practice. That's great. I get batting practice. You get to hit off a tee. That's great. But, you know, it's actually when I'm facing the competition that I'm better. It's facing the competition that others wilt. It's facing the competition, and I rise to the occasion, and I got pop, and I got game, and now I've got no shot to show that.
I would agree with all that. I mean, four preseason games, I still believe, is too many.
Four is too many.
And the way the NFL teams treat their preseason games, they treat them as if four is too many. I mean, correct. Jokes aside, four is too many.
Two is
two'd be great. One this year would be fine. I get it. It's a weird year. Do at least one.
Yes.
But they're going to send these guys in there with nothing. Just, all right, off we go. Game one of the season. This counts. Live bullets. Like, that doesn't feel right.
And
to
on
me,
top of
top
of lack of two-a-days, on top of hitting, right. on top of full live contact drills. And
but don't
camp.
Worry, the rookies are going to contribute this year. Like, I'll buy for a second that the rookies are going to contribute this year. You are who you already have been. I mean, if your rookie contributes, great. That's a bonus. But any hope that the rookie is going to come in, take a job, work it, you know, add to what, I don't, forget it. I'm not counting on one snap from a rookie this year. None. Not one. Anyone they give you is just going to be bonus. So, you know, you can take a look at where they are heading into a training camp. And they're Pro Football Focus. Now, I know we kind of go up and down with how we feel about Pro Football Focus, and that's fine. 32nd ranked defensive line?
Oh. Generous. Oh. Dude, I'm going.
You think they should be like,
I'm
30th?
Going 32 Bama, 33 Clemson, 34 Seahawks. I mean,
is their defensive line that bad?
On paper, going into this season, from a productivity standpoint, in a depth standpoint, where you know it's not just your four guys that you line up, because Jaron Reed's done some things in this league.
Yeah.
Puna's flashed occasionally. Bruce Irvin is, you know, a strong, capable veteran guy. But it's not about four or even five. I mean, the good ones, the top tier, roll 7-8 deep.
And you have to at that position, because those guys get tired if they go all out.
Yes. Yes. So I think when you look at the whole, I think that that's probably a fair number. And, you know, what's troubling is you kind of dig into it and you say, all right, was that acquisition? Was that draft? Is that development? What is it? What you know, how do you...
Yes. The answer is yes.
You wrote this note to us, and so I'm going to steal one of your points or lead you to it. But you're right. The most important position, save for quarterback in this league, is defensive line. And you have drafted first rounders and second rounders and third rounders, and you have spent money, and you that your number one free agent was Jaron Reed, and you've traded for Sheldon Richardson, and you traded for Jadeveon Clowney, and you've made moves to address that position. But it's on paper difficult to look at.
Well, your starting group right now is going to be Jaron Reed, a second round pick, Puna Ford, an undrafted free agent. Bruce Irvin?
He's a linebacker unless it's third down. So
okay, so not Bruce Irvin. LJ Collier?
Yep.
He's not a starter right now, I don't think, is he?
On this team.
Yep.
You think he is?
I mean, Rasheem Green's
Rasheem Green is going to start. That's a second round or third round pick.
Yeah, and Benson Mayo is on the other side.
That's your 32nd ranked group, and I mean, the one thing I think you could say, though, is the difference between starter and bench player is not very extreme, so you can
that's
rotate
nice.
Them in.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's really a, nice maybe benefit. That's a positive, like everyone's all about the same level, so you can just kind of rotate them in, and maybe that's the
that's
the best
not good
part.
Enough in this league, and we know
who
that.
Are your other interior defensive linemen? Who else is playing inside?
Brian Monet.
I don't think he's on the roster anymore, is he?
I don't know, maybe. He might be.
I don't think he is.
Who else
bring Tom Johnson back.
Who else is on your defensive, like legitimately? Who else is playing an interior defensive line position? If Puna Ford gets hurt tomorrow, who's playing that position?
Kyle?
I mean, I'm more of an edge guy. You want me inside?
No. No, we really do not.
You saw that Bennett retired, so that's not
that's
happening.
Out.
The NFL no. retired Michael Bennett.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean,
it's Cedric Lattimore.
Right. Cedric.
DeMarcus Christmas.
Yeah, he didn't play, but he can play.
DeMarc. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
LJ Collier can move inside.
Is that really what we're talking about in the interior defensive line? That's crazy.
Are you looking at the Seahawks roster right now?
Brian Monet is on the roster. He is there.
That has been a position of strength for them throughout the years. They've always found that Allen Branch,
Shamar Stephen.
Yeah, that guy who's just going to eat up defenders inside, eat up offensive linemen
Tony
inside.
Tony McDaniel.
They've always found those guys.
And that's what they're, I'm sure, thinking is we're going to find
that guy. Will be out there.
Yeah, and there
they
are.
Have to.
There are a bunch of older veteran defensive linemen that you know have got their wear and tear in this league and can play that little role and carve out that.
Go get big snacks out here.
Possibly. Mm-hmm. Possibly.
I take big snacks.
He's out there. I can't disclose that information.
Right. I mean, Fluke's not here anymore, so it's not like you'd have to take him on in practice. You get big snacks here.
No,
they're going to need some of that, or they're just going to get run on, right?
That is the group where it is, you know, I was chatting on the morning show this week, just kind of talking about what would be a disappointment for this season for the Seahawks. And if you go 9-7 and miss the playoffs, and why is it? That, I mean, that's going to be the group you're going to point to because they believe in that building, unlike Kyle. They believe that Rasheem Green can take another step.
Well, that's
fine.
And
he can go from 4.5 to 7.5. And they believe Bruce Irvin's going to get 8 or 9 sacks. And they believe that LJ Collier can be a contributor and a starter and a difference maker in time and will get his feet wet and will grow this season. And, you know, they believe those things. And then, you know, they've got to get something. I know you're giving them nothing, but Daryl Taylor and I mean, you've got to get something.
I'm not buying that.
You've got to get
I'll buy into LJ Collier's a better player than he was a year ago. I'll buy into we'll get a little bit more from Rasheem Green. I saw
Frank
Curtis.
Clark sprinkled in as a rookie at least at times.
But Frank Clark had
pop.
Preseason and everything else. These guys aren't going to have that.
Jaren Reed played second round that you traded for. This guy was a 48th pick you came up and you traded for, and you were nearly willing to take in the first round.
My over-under on sacks for Daryl Taylor this year is 1.
Yep. I'm in on that.
Anybody want the over?
I'm absolutely taking that number as
after
the
my
line.
George Fant projection a season ago, I will take that over.
You're
I
ready.
Take
my
that
over-under is
over.
1. By the way, I hope he has 12. That would be great.
Yes.
But I'm rooting for him. Don't get me wrong. But it's hard for me to imagine that a rookie is going to come in right away this year with no preseason, with a weird offseason and a weird training camp and everything else, and contribute.
Well, I'm
they barely contribute normally. How many sacks did Frank Clark have his rookie year?
Like 2.
Okay.
Or 1.5.
So I don't think the number under 1 is too crazy on Daryl Taylor.
July 21st, that there is another move to be made. I continue to hold out that hope. I think these guys are too smart.
So which one
I think
do
they
want?
Can look at that and go, you know what? I don't agree with Pro Football Focus, but you know what? It's not like we're 32, 31, 30. You're not 15.
They might be 24th,
yes.
But they're not 5th.
No, they're not anywhere near the top 15, right? And their production speaks of that, and their experience speaks for that. So I'm still holding out plenty of hope that an organization that has made moves in the 11th hour, an organization that is willing to take on some risk, an organization that is willing to play the game to the final minute, is sitting here looking as they did a year ago with the Clowney move, and whether it's Yannick Ngakoue, whether it's Jadeveon Clowney, whatever it is, some of these veteran defensive linemen, I still hold hope that they know in their heart of hearts that what they have on paper right now heading into this season is not good enough to win your division and win the NFC.
What do you want it to be?
To me, it's still Clowney. Even if he's a limited practice participant, he's a bright lights guy, he's a production guy, he's a disruption guy, mm-hmm. and it does not cost you, other than I think this season, some real millions of dollars for this season. He doesn't cost you cap space down the road. He doesn't cost you draft picks down the road. It's an Ngakoue and a Jamal Adams and other moves would. So to me, and I put that in a poll question, and I think that was the overwhelming candidate for most Seahawks fans out there. Nearly 60% of them said the same thing. Find a way to get a deal done with that guy. Even if it means a little bit of money this year, even if it means that he gets nicked up and injured and you only have him for 8 or 9 games.
You've kind of left yourself not much of a choice. I mean, if you want to continue to compete in Russell Wilson's prime, which you're in right now, and you have the 32nd ranked group in the second most important position after quarterback, like you have to do
Clowney's on that team.
Right? Where, I mean, you probably need to do two
is
things.
Is he 25th? Are they 27th?
All right, but what if it's Clowney and Snacks? And I'm not saying that Snacks is I understand that now that I know who he is, he's no longer the player he used to be.
Correct.
And that he's available for a reason. I'm not looking at him as a savior. I'm looking at him just as depth because, quite frankly, if you have an injury to Puna Ford or Jaren Reed, you're throwing Brian Monet out there. Or what was the other guy's name? Donaldson?
Marcus Christmas.
No, I know Christmas. Who was the
Lattimore.
Other guy?
Cedric Lattimore.
All right.
Place
Lattimore.
At the table.
Mm-hmm. Starting defense. Place at the table.
Right. Cedric Lattimore.
Who is that?
He's from Iowa.
Waller. He's the next Colin Cole, it sounds like to me.
Sounds
Iowa
like
guy,
it.
Let's go.
Yeah, it sounds exactly like that's what he is. So, yeah, add Jadeveon Clowney and Snacks or someone like him.
Yep.
where are you ranked? 20th?
Yeah, maybe low 20s.
Okay. At least that's doable. It's still not where you want to be, but you got Russell Wilson. You got a pretty good group of weapons. Like, you can start to, you know, write what you're going to look
like. And then all your lottery tickets that you think are going to work out now, if they actually do work out, then you have an average to above average defense.
And you got, Quentin Dunbar. That'd be nice. That's obviously going to help you in the secondary, shutting people down. So,
hey, by the way,
you're going to have to do something like that.
By the way, can I just say a little something here? A little kudos to the NFL. And I think in this time and in this day and age, you have to learn and be adaptive of what's going on around you. And I think there were a lot of folks on Sunday in the Twitter storm of all the players that came out and about thought, oh boy, here we go. The NFL and Roger Goodell and these guys, and they're just not going to, they're going to get in the same war that baseball did. And right, we're here, we're on the precipice of getting this thing going. They're going to play hardball and they're not going to, no, that it looks like by all accounts that they met the players and said, okay, we're not going to do what baseball did. We've learned that lesson in the court of public opinion. We all lose. We all lose. If we're going to fight this thing out and go back and forth and fight for two preseason games or fight for this testing or that, nope. If that's what you need to play this season, the fact that those two sides are taking it out of the public realm and looks like going to get this done privately behind the scenes, I think kudos to them to get this thing started on time.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not quite there yet.
Okay.
Let's maybe wait and see how this goes over the next few days before we start, jumping up and down for joy. The NFL, those owners, my guess is when the chips are down, we'll still act like all the other owners. That all right, we gave in on the preseason games. What's going to come? Where's the other shoe to drop there?
In time. I think that is businessmen.
Maybe it's not this year.
In time, the years to there's no question
about
that. I'm not saying that they changed the course. They are billionaires for a reason, right? They end up usually moving the cheese and winning in the end.
Right.
But at least in this season of what's going on in this country and what's kind of happened in other sports, I think they understood not the time. Not the time to kill the golden goose, not the time to fight over pennies. We will fight over real dollars in the cap and the revenue in the years to come, but not for this season.
Is this group of 31 other owners, are they going to find a way to oust Daniel Snyder? What are we doing? What are we doing with Daniel Snyder? I mean, it's like, has anything else happened this week? Yeah, I mean, I'm just waiting for the next thing on Daniel Snyder, and I hope this doesn't lose momentum. Like,
yep.
Come on. He's an incompetent owner. He took a once proud franchise and destroyed it from a competitive standpoint. They haven't been a legitimate competitor since forever. I know they had a quick upsurge with Robert, with RG3 the first year.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part,
with Cousins.
They've been an embarrassment since Joe Gibbs' first time around. I mean, it's been decades now since that franchise has been relevant on a national stage. He refused to change the name for years and then had we talked about it last week, the embarrassing way in which he finally agreed to do it, where he ticked off everybody on all sides of this issue. And then you get the Washington Post story, just, the listing all of the problems and the culture there and the way they were treating women. Like, what does it take? I mean, those other 31 owners have the power to do it. If they don't want them to be part of their club, I referenced it with Tom, Jake, and Stacey last week. If you've ever watched the show Billions, there's this great scene in there where he wants to own the New York Giants. Mm. And they talk about how sports ownership is essentially the way we knight people in the United States. That since we don't have a titled aristocracy or a knighting system, when you're at that level, they let you into their club. You get to have a sports franchise. Mm-hmm. Well, throw Daniel Snyder out of your club. He doesn't belong.
Well,
I mean, maybe he does, and that's the problem. But I would argue he doesn't deserve that.
I think it is going to be the sponsors who we have already seen, the FedEx and the Nike and the sponsors that put pressure on, that have the real dollars that still, even though he's got plenty
of
them.
The owners can do that too.
And the minority owners.
We're not going to deal with you anymore.
Minority owners in that franchise.
They already want out.
Absolutely.
That's the one.
It is.
That's the one. When the other owners of the team say,
correct, I don't want to be around this
group. We are not going to be connected with this anymore. You guys need to step in and do something.
And here is the appraisal for the franchise. And, and by the way, my stake and my percentage is now this. Pay up.
They forced Donald Sterling out. They could force Daniel Snyder out. And that's
Jerry Richardson out, too.
Absolutely. I mean, like, at some point, this has to happen, doesn't it? And I don't want to just sit here comparing one to the next and saying, is it better or worse? I forget that. It's all bad. Like, Daniel Snyder doesn't belong. He doesn't deserve to be an NFL owner. I understand that he's had the money for it, and he bought the team and all that.
And they let him in the club.
They did.
They let him in the club. And if you let him in the co-op, as you know, having a co-op, it's not a fee simple. It's not just easy to just buy him out and get him out. And once you're in that co-op, it can be awfully difficult to get him out.
Not in the NFL. You let him in, you can take him out. They can. Those owners are so powerful. And if 31 of the richest people in America are going to agree to gang up on you and say, we're not going to deal with you in any way in business until you're out, you'll get out. And if they really want to remove him, they can do it. And they probably should. I think the time has certainly come in three different ways now to show that Daniel Snyder is not a fit to be an NFL owner anymore. So I hope they're able to make that happen.
Good news. Yeah! Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Saul.
We haven't done this in forever. But there's a lot of news stories out there, so we run through some good news, bad news, no news. Kyle, I think you're leading us off today. What do we got?
Antonio Brown is retiring again. Maybe?
I heard Clayton this week on the morning show on The Drive. He joins the morning show at 7:10 every day at 7:15. He's like, but also, too, I'm done with this story. Like, let's be done with Antonio.
Oh, John's done with the story?
John is done.
And it must be over.
The first time, the second time, the third time. Listen, this was not going to happen. I'm just done with him. It's over. And I'm kind of in that camp. Like, come on.
That's bad news for Jake Heaps. Jake's the only one keeping the dream alive.
No, Jake,
there.
I finally, yesterday, I was like, Jake, dude, like, still? Like, we're going to go down this road. We're going to work out with him, Russell and Antonio Brown. You're going to commit to being a friend of this guy, a resource to him, and he's going to be like, I'm done. I'm out.
Right.
Like, are you still? Is he committed? Jake said, this is too much.
Okay, good.
This
so
is
now
a bridge
we
too
finally,
far.
Now this
well,
is too much.
I mean, come on. Let's connect the dots.
I'll peel back the curtain. Jake said immediately, I'm texting Russell right now. This is too much. are we still on board with this guy?
Let's connect the dots. He's been working with Russell Wilson. We can assume that Russell Wilson desperately wants him to be on the team.
Right.
He has somehow talked to the Seahawks, and the Seahawks report came out. The Seahawks did their due diligence on him, and they didn't make a move. Then the next thing that happens is Antonio Brown comes out and spouts off that he's done.
The risk isn't worth the reward.
It's been done. It's been figured out.
No kidding.
Seahawks made their decision. Russell Wilson is over with it, and Antonio Brown knows his
career. Well, good news. Good news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
California is poised to have all online school in the fall and no sports until 2021.
Oh, bad news. Bad news. Bums me out. Now, California can absorb, because of the weather, absorb this a little easier than, say, the state of Washington, that I think we're going to hear this news.
There's some weather differences here?
Slightly. You've got a two-week weather window from July 13th to July 30th that you can really enjoy it.
Right.
And maybe into August before the forest fires, and the ash is going to keep you in your home.
Bring it on.
No, it's going to keep you locked up. It's a bummer. I think kids need to play. We don't need to use this forum to totally express all of that in a negative way. But I'm bummed for the kids. I'm bummed for the student athletes.
A bum for the parents.
Bum for the parents.
These kids out of my house.
These kids are supposed to enroll early. If they're supposed to enroll at UW in January, now they come up here having not played since the fall of their junior year?
Yeah. That's a decision that they're all individually going to have to make, and I think you're going to see a lot of them make the choice to go to college.
Well, you know what? Should have gone to the SEC. Should have been good enough. Should have gone to the SEC. If you were better, you would have gone to the SEC. You wouldn't have this problem. Survival of the fittest.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Mariners outfielder Malik Smith borrowed a page from Ricky Williams and decided to live in a tent and avoid cell phone radiation.
Yeah, yes, you know, I would say it's pretty rewarding. Maybe the electrons from the earth put some good juju in my body. So let's see how this goes on as we continue to progress through this season.
Well, sounds like good news to me.
So, we don't know exactly. We know he was late reporting
juju
to camp.
Right.
And was living in a tent in Florida.
I'll be honest
with
you.
And he's avoiding radiation, right?
Well, I mean,
he said that. Yeah, look, I'm going to say no news. Malik Smith is a holdover. I don't view Malik as part of the group that is going to come up and be here and relevant when the Mariners are ready to compete. To me, he is a holdover. I'll be surprised if he lasts this year playing center field for the Mariners. So interesting dude, funny guy. I mean, he's kind of fun dude to be around.
Yes.
I'd rather hang out with Malik Smith than a lot of the other guys on this team, but I don't think he's going to be a very important part of their future.
No. And Braves, Rays, Mariners a couple different times is probably it. I mean, he's a good player, but he's not a major league starting
center
fielder.
He's got a GM who likes him. Jerry goes out and finds Malik Smith.
Yes.
He brings him to him.
Sometimes he trades him that day.
Yeah.
But he goes back and gets him back. There you go.
Was he underwhelming? Was he disappointing to you, or was he just
the guy
that
he's about what I was expecting after meeting him in spring training.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's about the kind of return you'd expect on someone like Mike Zunino.
Jeez.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Cal football players are spearheading a Pac-12 players group that is threatening to boycott the season if they don't get 50-50 revenue split, insurance, post-career, and new safety protocol.
Good luck.
Really?
Good news. Bad
really?
News.
This
no
would
news?
Be Stanford.
Good luck
Stanford
on that
Stanford
will
one. Join in. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. They really think they're that irreplaceable, that there's not 1,000 kids behind them waiting for their scholarship.
No, people love watching Akron.
At 1AA level and at other places that are just... Do they not think that
I know now Haley's committed to Montana, yes. But you're right. People prefer to watch Montana and Montana State to watching the D1A.
You really, in Cal, 6-5 Cal,
yeah.
You really think
Cal's
they're...
Cal's really... Yes. That's the...
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my old producer at ESPN when we would get a tough assignment, right? Because you kind of knew on paper, like, yep, this is going to be a tough one. There's going to be no one in the stands, and no one's going to watch this one, and it's up against this game, and yep, we can complain all we want. And if we keep complaining, then, you know, the 100 guys that want my job behind me are going to get that job. Because I think in this realm, these players believe they're a lot more valuable asset than they actually are.
I don't think that's true. But
threatening someone with how replaceable they are is that makes me squirm a little.
I would agree.
Like,
with that.
Oh, you don't want to agree to the setup of this job? Well, we'll replace you in no time. A lot of people want your job. You'll be gone.
But the market bears that out. The market says this is a fair trade. Come to Cal. Yeah, you couldn't get into this school. You get an elite education. And when you're done, you're going to graduate. And this has been kind of the trade through the years. And if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it.
The problem with that kind of an argument, Brock, and I'm not accusing you of being like this, but that's the same kind of argument that's used in the Dan Snyder situation in Washington. Oh, you want to speak up against what's going on here? Don't worry about it. You're replaceable. And it leads to a culture of silence where people end up
harassment
taking stuff.
Is very.
I understand that.
It's not even a fair comparison.
I said that it's a similar kind of logic. It's not a similar situation, but it is a similar kind of logic. And the idea is, when you're replaceable, you don't get to speak up. And I think that's what the Cal players are saying. And I think that's what players around college football have been saying now for a while in growing number. Okay, yeah, maybe we are replaceable, but that doesn't mean we should be forced to not make any of the enormous amount of money that is coming into the situation. Right. I know you and I aren't going to agree on
no,
this ever.
But we're going to learn, especially if there is no college football and programs around the country close, we're going to learn that this like balloon of all these millions and bazillions of dollars that everyone else is making when programs are shutting down all over the place, that maybe there weren't the bazillions and millions of dollars.
Good news, bad news, no news.
John Rahm wins despite receiving a 2-stroke penalty.
Yeah, this is, I think, bad news. Did you watch any of this over the weekend? The Memorial was fascinating. Great tournament.
It looked like a U.S. Open.
Oh, my God. I mean, those guys couldn't do anything.
No.
Which was fascinating because they'd played there the week before
totally
on the
different.
Same course and, like, ripped it up.
Right.
Didn't water the course.
No, yeah, the greens looked like chambers. Yes. Speaking of the U.S. Open.
Pin positions were ridiculous. I mean, it was crazy to watch. What was Tiger, 7 over at one point? I think he finished 6 over. I mean, those guys were struggling. Spieth was, 1 over and finished 13th? I mean, so it was really, really hard golf course. And give John Rahm credit. He was awesome the entire
week. Number one in the world.
Number one in the world. And I watched him in person when I went to
How tall
Phoenix.
Is he?
He's not short.
He's not short.
No, he's a pretty
big
dude.
But he's not
dude.
Like 6'3", 6'4"?
I don't know if he's quite that tall, but he's probably at least 6 feet.
Okay.
But his swing is so short. Yes. Like, in person, he barely brings his shoulders back.
Being
otherwise,
Fino.
Otherwise, he'd hit it too far. Like, he wouldn't be able to control it. It's crazy to watch him. But he has this great shot, if you haven't seen it, a little flop shot that pops up in the air, hits the ground, and then rolls
birdie.
In. It's amazing. Par, I think. Oh, no, birdie. You're right.
Birdie,
it was
par
for birdie.
Three. Yep.
And they give him a 2-stroke penalty, so it turns into a bogey, as he said, the best bogey shot he's ever hit, because the ball moved during one of his practice swings. So you've seen it, right?
And he didn't know it, though.
That's what's crazy to me. He couldn't have seen that.
No.
Or, I mean, he could have, but it's very realistic that he didn't.
The post-round interview with Amanda, she was like, what?
Right.
The ball moved. No, I haven't heard a thing about that.
Right. This isn't a Sergio situation where he's like clear, or Patrick Reed, where they're clearly doing some stuff in the bunker that's iffy. There's no, I mean, it's very, very plausible, if not likely, that he
didn't
see that.
This is a Buffalo Wild Wings commercial come to life.
Right.
Where they're all watching it, right? Like on the TV screens and everything else, and they're dictating what's going to happen. That the rules officials are watching the television copy of that and seeing, ooh, in super slow-mo, there was some movement of the ball.
They weren't supposed to look at things that were, you know, anything that you couldn't see with the naked eye, isn't supposed to be reviewable. So I'm confused as to why this ended up as a two-stroke penalty. Thankfully, it doesn't end up affecting the tournament or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a bad precedent. I thought it was, I don't know. I understand why the rules of golf are in place, and I understand there's the gentlemanly aspect to all of that, and that's fine. I'm in support of all of that. But I don't feel like this broke that in any way. I thought that was kind of weak. Man, it's not like I'm some huge Jon Rahm fan.
No, you're not.
But I don't know.
I mean, you were a Seve Ballesteros fan. He was the last Spaniard to be number one in the world. So kudos to Jon Rahm.
Did you hear him talking about it afterwards
at all?
I thought he was pretty good. I've heard some negative things about him, that he's not real well liked on tour by the other players.
Oh, really? Like Spieth?
Yeah. I've not heard that about Jordan Spieth, who I think... I think the other couple of years ago was like the person they liked the most.
Until
on tour.
He yelled at Michael.
No one thinks that.
Brock texting
you.
Us this week. I didn't even reply. Brock's like, oh, I'm out on Spieth. Like, you've been out on Spieth for 3 years.
Right.
All you do is trash Spieth.
I'm sorry.
You say he's got a bad attitude. He's got a bad game. He yelled at Michael. You can't stand that he yelled at Michael. And now you're like, oh, I'm out on Spieth.
Perfect shots, Michael.
He can't put together 4 good rounds, so I'm out. I'm rooting for Spieth now. Like still, like he's in contention. He hit a shot the other day. I'm like, stay in the green. Stay in the darn it. Like, I'm getting mad at him.
Quit Jordan Love.
I know. You don't get to count. All right. Hey, good stuff. Hopefully next week, Brock. We're talking baseball games.
Yes, we will.
We're talking, getting real close
training
to talking
camp.
Training camp. So there we go. All right. Good stuff. We'll catch you guys in a week. Until then, the hay.
Barn.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!